gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a lot to talk about today. Stuff I forgot to talk about yesterday that we need to get into when it comes to just the overall technocratic control system that they're building. I'm just every day, you know, I come in and all the stories from yesterday are on my desk. And I go through and make sure I hit everything I needed to, clear it off, bring in all the news stories. I forgot about this one. British government plans to introduce cameras that detect emotion. The British government is planning to expand the surveillance measures by implementing cameras capable of analyzing movements and emotions in public spaces. This initiative is claimed to help prevent crime and suicides. However, it raises concerns about privacy and the extent of government oversight. Yeah, just one of the many stories that just like falls through the cracks because we're dealing with so much insanity around the world. But we'll get back to the Orwellian takeover of the entire Anglosphere, and we'll connect it to what's going on in Australia as they implement a new raft of ever more restrictive policies about free speech. We'll get into all of that as we jaunt around the world surveying the state of total domination and world tyranny. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch. For Wednesday, the 10th of December, 2025, Trump extends deadline for Zelensky's peace agreement from Thanksgiving to Christmas. This is from Infowars.com. Find the story there. President Donald Trump has offered Ukraine's dictator a generous extension to ending his war. Previously, the president said the dictator had until Thanksgiving to accept the peace offer or be cut off from U.S. support. But since that deadline has come and gone, Trump will continue his support of Ukraine until Christmas, likely the Western Christmas of December 25th. Zelensky is still holding on. He's talking about being open to holding elections, but there are some qualifiers that he wants to add in. And of course, they've got to, you know, shore things up, get all of the graft concluded so their corruption could go unpunished. This is the thing about the globalists. Everywhere they are becomes a crime scene. So then it becomes incumbent on them to make sure the conflict never ends or to make sure the U.S. never gets to bring in surveyors and find out what happened. It's the same story over and over, whether it's Ukraine or, you know, Israel and Gaza. It's like, well, we can't exactly open up and go back to normal because if we do, all of the endless corruption and the theft of billions of dollars would be unveiled. So they're digging in. Meanwhile, Barry Weiss picks Tony Docupel, I don't know how to pronounce his name, to anchor CBS Evening News. CBS News, under Larry Ellison's handpicked self-described Zionist fanatic editor-in-chief Barry Weiss, has reportedly selected hair model Tony Docupel, I think, to announce CBS Evening News. We'll get back into that story in just a little bit. It gets crazy, trust me. Meanwhile, gunboat diplomacy returns. U.S. seizes oil tanker off Venezuela. President Trump confirmed to Bloomberg the U.S. forces intercepted and seized a tanker near Venezuelan coast, saying further information will be provided soon. Gunboat diplomacy was on full display Wednesday afternoon after Bloomberg reported that U.S. forces intercepted and seized a sanctioned Venezuelan oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela. This move underscores the Trump administration's Monroe 2.0 posturing as Washington seeks to reassert control over the Western Hemisphere after years of neglect. So it does appear as though we're accelerating things, moving up in the escalation ladder, where we're actually seizing their exports. And again, I think this contributes even more to my thought that Trump doesn't really want to go to war with Iran. He wants to bring to bear all of the pressures he possibly can to try to get concessions out of Venezuela. But I don't know if we're planning on doing a full-fledged invasion, because that would be ill-advised. Meanwhile, Trump vows to make America affordable again in Pennsylvania speech. President Donald Trump spoke in Pocono, Pennsylvania on Tuesday, where he vowed to make America affordable again. The president and his administration have been moving to the message of affordability in the U.S., that they've been as they've been attacked for by Democrats over economic concerns. We'll get back to that as well in just a little bit. I'll probably start off with a clip from that speech yesterday. Finally, we have this. Tourists to the U.S. would have to reveal 5 years of social media activity under a new Trump plan. They've already instituted this type of thing for people seeking visas or to become, you know, residents here in America. But now it will extend to tourists, where if you want to visit America as a foreigner, you're going to have to hand over 5 years of your social media activity, probably to make sure you're not anti-American, if I had to guess. I say the comment dripping with sarcasm. We'll be back on the other side. That's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you by thealexjonesstore.com. Stay with us, folks.
You have until this Sunday, December 14th, 2025, to get 40% off store-wide at theowlshowstore.com. And that means all of the incredible supplements that will enrich and empower your life. They really work. We have 5-star reviews, and they fund our operation to take on the globalists. So please do your Christmas shopping at theowlshowstore.com. It is a 360 win for everybody. Now, ultramethylene blue liquid, 40% off. Bovine colostrum, the very best, running out, still 40% off. Ultramethylene blue caps, 40% off. Back in stock. Ultramethylene red, that's right, it's back in stock, but it has a very low supply. Ultimate CMOS gummies and capsules, all back in stock, 40% off at thealexshowstore.com. Again, please do your Christmas shopping at thealexshowstore.com. Get great products that enrich your life and funds the tip of the spear in the fight against the globalists.
Watching the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, waging war against the unelected technocrats that simply assert they have the right to rule over us because they know better than us. And that really is one of the main things we'll be talking about today. As would, despite all of their cries of democracy, democracy, of course, to them, and in reality is just ruled by the media. And so they love democracy as long as they have all of the mechanisms of information transmission. As soon as that slips out of their hands, suddenly democracy becomes dangerous and we need technocrats to rule over us. It's very convenient. Let's start with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is on an affordability kick, I guess. Which is a little weird because 2 days ago he said affordability is a Democrat scam. Kind of odd. At his first stop of his affordability tour, Trump mocks affordability. He had charts that he read from touting economic data. The state around him was filled with signs reading lower prices, bigger paychecks. He introduced Pennsylvanians who said they had more take-home pay because of his policies. But if he was supposed to launch a speaking tour to connect with Americans struggling with higher prices and stagnant wages, President Donald Trump didn't hesitate to veer off course. He mocked the word affordability, touted how high the stock market had risen, and said Americans don't need so many pencils. He launched into a number of digressions to disparage the country of Somalia, the concept of climate change, and the news media in the back of the room. So it was classic Trump, of course. This was, I guess, a kickoff of a tour to promote Trump's economic policies. And to be honest, I don't know who he's listening to, but they're lying to him. I really think it's not hard to figure out what's going on here. I think Trump has worm tongues whispering in his ear that everything is going great and keeping away from him the reality of the situation, which is his base is fractured and infuriated. And I think he's probably going to learn this. I mean, it's good that he's out on the road. I'm glad he's out on the road because this is the time when Trump supporters can actually interface with Trump without anybody getting in the way. So I think in an effort to save the Republican Party from themselves and to break through the, you know, informational control that they have as a leash on Trump, you get to go to one of these events, maybe strategically use your booze, maybe in a moment of quiet during the rally, you can have a, you know, pre-prepared statement to yell out to try to break through to Trump to let him know we are his supporters. We are the ones who got him through. We are the ones he's supposed to be serving. We are the ones he depends upon, and we are not happy with the way things are going. Okay? Maybe that's just me, but I have the feeling I'm speaking for a pretty large chunk of his supporters because I talk to them on a daily basis, and not a lot of people are happy. Let's go to clip number two. This is Trump doing the Trump thing, which a lot of times we love him for, but when he's so off the mark, it just is kind of absurd. Let's watch.
We keep going like this. I don't know if we can do that. But if we keep going like this, there'll be nothing ever in history like it. Already, they are saying better than Lincoln, better than Washington, better than anybody. The best 10 months ever in the history of the presidency.
Okay, but what are you talking about? Better than Lincoln, better than Washington, best 10 months in American history? It's like, but what? What do you mean, though? But tangibly, what has happened? What has actually occurred here? I mean, if it was Lincoln, like, you know, imprisoned the entire legislature of the state of Maryland. He did some pretty powerful things. We haven't seen anything even remotely like that from Trump. And again, it's just not true. I'm sorry, it's just not. I would love for it to be true. I'd love for him to go out there and go, hey, you know, we're getting things done. We may have had a slow start, but the gears are moving now, and here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to do it. I'd be all for it. But when we've seen nothing that we can really sink our teeth into in the last 10 months as a real solid victory for the American people, then touting yourself as the greatest president who has ever lived rings a little bit hollow and is kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you. And again, people know this, like gas is over $3 where I live. Okay. Under the first Trump administration, it was in the $1 arena, not anymore. So are we doing a Biden here? Is this what it felt like to be a Democrat and to be told that Biden is succeeding in lowering all of the inflation rate and everything else, and told that he's the sharpest tool in the shed? It's gaslighting. I don't believe it. And Trump shouldn't believe it either. Somebody's telling him that he's doing super well. And I guess it's because of the stock market. Stock market doesn't really relate to the average person. So who cares? Who cares if the stock market is high? Great. NVIDIA gets to make more chips. Meanwhile, we're having our entire country stolen out from under us. And I'm constantly like sort of constantly reestablished in my mind how frustrating this is, and how constantly we're told that things are just impossible when they're just not. It's just so many of these things would be so incredibly easy to do. And the fact that we're not doing them is because we're making the choice not to do them. And of course, a lot of this has to do with immigration and things that Trump could be doing to pressure companies to not sell out our birthright from under us. We'll talk more about immigration in a little bit. Let's stick with the affordability thing. Clip number four here. Trump's affordability speech is now him talking about how children don't need as many pencils as you think, which, again, maybe not the most compelling argument. I think I get what he's going for here, but let's go to clip number four. Here's Trump again in Pennsylvania yesterday.
Got national security. We need the one thing you need steel. You know, you can give up certain products. You can give up pencils. Because under the China policy, you know, every child can get 37 pencils. They only need one or two. You know, they don't need that many. But you always need steel. You don't need 37 dolls for your daughter. Two or three is nice, but you don't need 37 dolls.
So I get what he's saying. What he's saying is that, like, in the, you know, you have to prioritize national security, because if you don't do that, it doesn't matter how many pencils you have, it doesn't matter how many dolls you have, if your, you know, country is being invaded or you're being destroyed, like, you got to prioritize things. I get what he's saying. Doesn't come across well, though, does it? It comes across almost kind of socialist. How many dolls do you need? As many as I want and can afford, actually. I'm an American, thank you. How many guns do I need? All of them. What do you mean need? How many pencils do I need? None. I use pens. That's beside the point, though. It just doesn't make any sense. What is he talking about? I don't know. I'm not buying steel personally. I guess that contributes to the overall rise in prices. And the reason I think this is so important for Trump to get right, and he's not getting it right, is because this is the number one thing motivating people right now. And it is intertwined with, obviously, immigration. But the immigration is the cause and the economy collapsing is the effect, right? So I'm going to go to a couple clips here. Do we have 42 censored? Let's go to clip 42 here. This is a young woman who was out looking for a house, and it's your average. Well, it's actually a little different than normal. Normally, it's just people being like, I have to live in my car because even though I have a full-time job, all the houses around me are unaffordable. And this person has a little bit of a more aesthetic outrage at what's going on. But I want you to pay attention about halfway through the video to what she immediately blames for the situation that she finds herself in. She's looking for a house, and all she can find are poorly constructed, ugly, pathetic, like dehumanizing homes, when she wants something that feels cozy and joyful and a place that she'd want to raise a family, not just a box that's been thrown up to temporarily house a person, a economic module for the time being. Let's go to clip number 42 here.
I'm on Zillow looking at houses like I always do, and I'm literally about to crash out. If I see one more cardboard, I'm about to cuss, sorry, already cussed, sorry. Cardboard box of a house that's $1 million for a cardboard box. I'm this close to a neighbor, and you want me to pay $1 million for that? For a yard that has rocks in the backyard? I'm shaking. I'm getting so mad. It's crazy. I want whimsical. I want arched doors. I want Tudor-style home. I want beautiful baseboards again. I want stained glass windows and cool chandeliers again. I don't want these cardboard homes that are squished in like sardines next to my neighbors with an HOA of like $300 per month. Are you kidding me? Like, what's happening to the world? Capitalism? BlackRock? That's what's fucking happening to the world.
So she's right about BlackRock. She's not right about what BlackRock is doing being anything related to capitalism. It's pure exploitation. It's corporatism. It's crony capitalism. It is what's wrong with our country, and it's what the right-wingers in this country dedicate themselves to. They are under the impression that, well, BlackRock's stock went up, therefore it must be a good thing. Sure, they have taken houses off the market that would have been affordable to young people. They're now going to rent them back to those young people. So the young people will end up paying the same amount as they would for a mortgage, only at the end of a 10-year term, they, instead of owning a home outright, will own nothing. Okay, I mean, this is not, and there's so many other reasons why as well, right? People talk about BlackRock buying homes. There's so many reasons why home ownership is like indelibly tied to freedom. Home ownership is a mark of liberty, just like gun ownership is. Because when you have a home, you can lock that door. You can keep anybody you want out of it, up to and including the government, if they don't have a warrant by going through the process of providing probable cause. But if you're renting a house and it's your landlord's home, then they can let in whoever the hell they want. They can search whatever the hell they want. They can install whatever cameras they want to surveil you. You lose a crucial part of being a free human being when you are constantly occupying, you know, a temporary shelter owned by somebody else. It is dehumanizing at the end of the day, and it allows for maximal control over innumerable industries. Because when a homeowner owns a home and wants to get work done, then they got to go, you know, find a local plumber. They got to find a local HVAC guy. They got to find a local roof repair or lawn care person. And they're actually creating jobs and generating business for all these sorts of small businesses. But if you have a giant neighborhood that's owned by a giant corporation like BlackRock that has under its purview and under its umbrella a lot of major national corporate chain, you know, plumbers, you can have a giant franchise that has contracts with BlackRock. So they'll handle all of the, you know, house care. It's all about centralization of everything. And that included in that is the industry. I'm way off the mark, but it's important to understand why BlackRock is doing this. And it's not about making the most money. It's about using the function of capitalism and claiming that you're practicing capitalism when in reality, you're systematically destroying the freedoms that America has fought and died for. Only people are willingly giving it up because of the convenience of not having to take care of your own house. It's actually, you know, I understand the appeal. If you rent a house and something breaks, you just make one call, hey, this is broken, and then your landlord has to take care of it. If you own a home, it's actually your responsibility, which is actually a good thing, right? Alex constantly, and today I heard him about, you know, strong times, or, you know, strong men, hard times, easy times, weak men, that whole process. Yeah, that's actually part of it. Like when your house is your responsibility and you feel a sense of ownership for it, you have to, on your own and by your own volition, do the hard things that are required, which actually tie you closer to your house. Like these things are all important in combination of building a society based on humanity rather than based on exploitation of humanity by giant corporations. But her first thought when infuriated, as she rightfully is, people might think it's silly. Oh, she wants stained glass windows and nice baseboards. Like, oh, you're so spoiled. No, it's what we deserve. No, it's what we have earned collectively as a nation. You're telling me that we are the most powerful, successful nation in the history of the world by a factor of 100, and our own people can't afford to live in homes that are at least nice looking, that are at least have some care poured into them? We could do it 100 years ago. Somehow 100 years ago, you could order a house from, Sears magazine and have it delivered on a flatbed truck and built by artisans, and that house is still standing to this day. I know because I have friends that live in them. They're all over the place in Austin, in the nice neighborhoods. The West Campus in Austin is full of these homes that actually came from magazines, Sears Roebuck. Somebody picked it out, paid $1,000, and a home was delivered that is standing to this day while homes that were built a decade ago are crumbling right next to them. Why could we figure it out back then, but we can't do it now? How has this economy served us if we can't afford what our ancestors 100 years ago could afford on a lower salary doing manual labor while the wife stayed at home and worked? We are broken as a system and it needs fixing, not celebrating the slight application of the brakes as we tumble off the cliff. Oh, the stock market's higher. Great. I live in a cardboard box that I can't afford. Let's focus on what actually matters. And people are getting pissed at this. And of course, it collides with the immigration topic head on with things like this. And very similar to the rant I went on yesterday about the woman at the Cinnabon and talking about how we need to do something to protect white women in service roles. I don't, because there's something about it when the foreigners and the immigrants come over here and they feel like they've earned what they've been given and they feel a sense of superiority and they feel a sense of condescension to the white people that are like working their fingers to the bone just to try to make ends meet. And they feel like they've, gamed the system and are living like millionaires when they've never provided anything, never accomplished a damn thing in their lives. Let's go to clip number 43 here. Here's a woman who works all night just to support herself and has to get mocked and laughed at by immigrants living off the dole. Let's watch.
Okay, I got something to say. Okay, I'm at work. It's 2:00 in the morning, and I'm at work. Okay, these bitches come in, don't speak English. Okay, oh, and all of a sudden, they're white racists behind the counter. Okay, this is what the they ring up. Look at this. Nothing but junk food. Nothing but junk food. Look how long this bitch is. Look how long it is. And guess how much the remaining balance is? Guess how much these two racist pieces of shit that is coming to my country and you're making fun of me because I'm standing at a job at 2 in the morning? Well, guess what? I got another job to go to when I get off at this one at 6 until about 3 in the afternoon. And then I got to get some sleep. And then I got to turn around and do it all over again by 11 o'clock. So you motherfuckers that come into this country and treat us like shit, I hope they bounce you out of this country so fast that your sombreros are left behind. You mother, guess how much these bitches get? Guess how much? Let me tell you. $3,247 mother tax dollar, mother tax dollar money. And then insult me. Oh, look at the white, I'm talking Spanish, looking at me, laughing. Oh, the nasty white bitch. Yeah, I said, oh, get out of my motherfucking country. Get out, you worthless motherfucker. Get the fuck out.
Well, she's not wrong. In fact, she's exactly right. In fact, how do more people not feel this way? that's the reality of the modern American economy. It's poor, overworked women working all night and the next day just to put food on their table, being literally mocked and laughed at by immigrants who are being given many times that woman's salary for nothing. And then they feel a sense of superiority about it. And of course, the corporations are in on it. Who do you think's selling all the junk food? Who do you think's making bank off of this? They're hiring the people for less than Americans would work for. You think that woman, that's the woman that Trump is saying, you know, can't be trained to, you know, build missiles, can't be trained to build batteries. Now, she'll be left behind. We need Indians for that. Not this woman who works her ass off 2 a.m. scanning items, going to another job at 3, having to be up again at 11 a.m. to do it all over, day in, day out, no rest, no break, no celebration, no vacation. We can't help her. We can't provide for her. Yeah, migrant influencer waves around cash as he mocks U.S. taxpayers who work like slaves after he urged fellow illegals to become squatters in U.S. houses. Slaves. Slaves is what we are. We work, they eat. That's what it is. We work our fingers to the bone. They eat. We have to do everything by the book. We can't let $1 slip through the tax man's grasp or else, you know, the IRS is knocking on our door. Meanwhile, billion-dollar corporations are being paid by the government and paying nothing in taxes while they're hiring Indians who then offshore the entire company and spend billions and billions and billions of dollars training their overseas counterparts. I got stories about that too. I got all sorts of stories about immigration here, especially when it comes to a place like Maine. And it's economic and it's racial and it's all just unacceptable and we have to stop all of it. I told you yesterday, Microsoft got a new Indian CEO who decided randomly to, first off, lay off 15,000 Microsoft employees while simultaneously applying for 7,500 H-1B visa applications. Then they choose to invest $17.5 billion in India to support the country's ambitions. Can't spare any money to train up people in America. Can't do it. They're there to be tax slaves. They're there to work their fingers to the bone and get nothing. Meanwhile, the corporations that we built that only exist because of the freedom and talent and prosperity of our country get taken over by Indians who immediately send $17.5 billion to their co-ethnics, to their homeland. They're not the only ones. Amazon's even worse. Amazon is going to invest $35 billion in India and plans to create 1 million jobs by 2030 in India. Microsoft, $17.5 billion investment into India, American money. Amazon, $35 billion. Rose to prominence, gained power, gained wealth solely off the backs of the American people. Our laws, our system, our prosperity, our market. Taken over, hijacked, liquidated, sent to foreigners. And they're still sending people over here to take our jobs here. We are under attack from every direction. Trump wants to talk about affordability. He can do something about literally any of this. We'll be right back.
For me, with everything going on, the big takeaway is the world is in a fourth turning, a mega change. Globalists know that. Their plan is failing. And just because we're opposing them doesn't mean things aren't going to derail and get really, really nasty. It just means coming out of all these crises, we have a shot of building a civilization and having some civilization survive and then rebooting it and building something even better going into a new golden era. Anyone in general not rooting for Trump and his economic plans is insane. And for the left, not distributed around the world, that want economic collapse, believing they're going to bring in their new socialist utopia or communist utopia on its ashes, in all the actuaries and all the futurist studies and all the Rand Corporation analysis and my own, and there's really nobody, including the establishment, that thinks you're going to get your New World Order, transhumanist, you know, communist, Great Reset now. That's what everyone's rebelling against. That's the old system that they were trying to push as the new system. But just because that's falling apart, again, doesn't mean that we're out of the woods. And I came across articles today talking about rich enclaves in the United States, and there's others around the world, where the ultra-rich don't want to be next to a big city. They don't want to be next to glitz and glamour. There's mass exoduses to rural areas where they're building armored redoubts where you'll have 20 to 30 to 40 rich people, and I mean people building $40 million houses and bunkers, ahead of what's happening. And then there's even more ultra-rich that have all sorts of hidden facilities in the middle of nowhere. And the ultra-rich have giant fleets of yachts and flotillas where you've got a lot of these Google billionaires will have a line of 6-7 ships, some that are just massive. And they own private islands in the South Pacific, then they also know things are so dangerous, they're ready to flee there. So that acceleration of people running for the hills and building their bunkers has been going on for a long time, but it's just peaking and peaking and peaking is a big deal. So when you got signs like that, it gives you a little bit of an idea of what we're navigating here. Yeah, here he is this year, warning of Terminator-style apocalypse. Oh, well. You can go back to 2005-06 where I did reports on that. But now this information is everywhere. And like I've said to Zuckerberg on air and in other ways, the last few years, I said, you better come and join us. You better stop attacking us from behind. If you think you're going to be safe in that armored fortress you've built there in Kauai, think again. I'm not threatening you. I can tell you I love Kauai. I've been there many times. The last few times I went, I cannot go to a store, to the beach, anywhere, or go on a fishing trip without everybody telling me how they can't wait till things collapse to come get you. I mean, the villagers practically have their torches lit. Well, Zuckerberg's got escape yachts as well, and reportedly an escape submarine and underground deal. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. The point is, guys, that's not going to protect you long-term if stuff collapses. What's going to protect you is getting out of what you're doing and helping turn civilization and society around, okay? And if you think during a total collapse at a few weeks or a few months into it that your security detail isn't going to turn on you, that's a whole other thing.
Folks, again, I really, I don't know what Trump is looking at, what information he is being given. You know, basically ever since he got elected in the first place in 2016, it's almost like every election since then has been treated like a referendum on Trump himself. And for good reason, because he dominates the political sphere, and most Democrats are simply running on an anti-Trump platform, and most Republicans have figured out that a Trump endorsement is really the only surefire way to get ahead in the polls. Now, that's not true anymore, actually, and we're seeing that time and time again. It's being reinforced over and over. The only contrary action to this trend would be the victory that happened in Tennessee, where this Afton Bain actually lost, thank God. But we showed you the video yesterday of a Nashville city councilwoman just as vicious and racist as the day is long. So it's not even going well there. But whether it's the election in New York City or any of the special elections that have happened in the last few months, Trump has been blown out of the water. And we've seen, what was the one, like 48-point swing, where the same county that went for Trump in 2024 by plus 9 was now negative 43 or whatever it was. It's like things have flipped completely, and we have another one today. Another one occurred today. Eileen Higgins wins the Miami mayoral race. She's the first Democratic mayor of Miami in 30 years. 30 years. Democrat Eileen Higgins has flipped the Miami mayor's office, defeating Republican Emilio Gonzalez and marking the latest sign of her party's momentum heading into next year's midterms. According to Decision Desk HQ, Higgins is the first Democrat to become mayor of Miami since 1997. She bested Gonzalez, a former Miami city manager who served on President Trump's Homeland Security Department transition team. Okay? So somebody directly related with a position in Trump's admin just got blown out of the water and lost the Miami mayor race for the first time in 30 years. Is that not a signal that you should be paying attention to? That you're losing, actually? That you're not the greatest president since Washington, in fact? It's offensive you would even say that. I don't want to not like Trump. I recognize Trump is like the only hope that we have. That's why I'm so mad. How is he messing it up this badly? How do you go in to the presidency in 2025 with the greatest political cachet we've ever seen, bringing in Democrats and RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard and the whole tech bros? Like, you come in with this mandate to rule. 10 months later, everybody's abandoned. Everybody is choosing the other side. Everybody feels like we've been tricked. At first stop of his affordability tour, Trump mocks affordability. And again, I don't know what these people think is happening. I don't know what world they think they live in. We'll go to this video. This is from yesterday, clip 40. Susie Wiles, who Trump says is the most powerful person in the world, former Netanyahu campaign manager, now chief of staff at the White House. Major problem if you listen to the actual America First people in what's wrong with Trump. Susie Wiles is one of the first they'll point to. Here she is yesterday talking about their strategy going into the midterms. You tell me if this is a positive outlook for the Republican Party. Let's watch.
He's going to have a fun next year, but we're going to put him on the campaign trail too. Typically, just a little bit of campaign speak, if I may.
Yeah.
Typically, you in the midterms, it's not about who's sitting at the White House. It's you localize the election.
Right.
And you keep the federal officials out of it. We're actually going to turn that on its head.
Good.
And put them on the ballot. Because so many of those low propensity voters are Trump voters.
Yes, they are.
And we saw a week ago Tuesday what happens when he's not on the ballot and not active. So I haven't quite broken it to him yet, but he's going to campaign like it's 2024 again.
Oh.
For all these people that he helps. He doesn't help everybody, mm-hmm. but for those he does, he's a difference maker. And he's certainly a turnout machine. So the midterms will be very important to us.
Yeah.
He'll work very hard to keep the majority.
Yeah, we can't afford to have this stalled.
No.
And one of the things I keep telling people, I'm sorry, I'm going to talk politics. I got to talk this. I am so frustrated with all of the people that gave abundantly to organizations like ours and others over the last 4 years to make sure that we won. And our objective was threefold. We didn't just want the presidency. Mm-hmm. We wanted the House. We wanted the Senate. And we were very strategic on where we went, how we focused to get those moms out. And now it's like they're all sitting on their laurels and going, oh, we're good. I'm like, I don't think you realize how good we aren't.
Yeah.
And this with swipe of a pen and one election can change everything.
And the majorities in both houses.
Yes.
Right.
They are.
This is a good Senate year for Republicans. Every 2 years is what it is for House members. So there's candidate recruitment. The president started raising money for the midterms the day after the election.
Good.
And he's sitting on a huge war chest to help these people. And he'll use it, and he'll use himself, and he'll use his money that he's raised, probably his money too, and nobody can outwork him. So every reason to be confident, but we have to actually get it done.
Yeah,
there's no reason to be confident, lady. What are you talking about? There are like 10 things wrong with what she just said. First of all, Trump has not done what he's needed to. His appearance at these places will not be the boon that you think it will. Two, is that what I want my president doing when he's in office, when he has all these other concerns to be focused on? He's going to be gallivanting around the country, giving stump speeches, trying to drive out the vote for people that don't employ his agenda. You're telling me he's raised all of this money? He's helped get all these people into office? He's the difference maker? He's the reason they're in office, and yet they don't serve him, so why does he do it? Why is he going to give out all of this money to his hand-picked, you know, selection of people when they get into office and they pass nothing? See, he wouldn't have to campaign at all if the Congress could point to a record of success of codifying his policies into law, as is their job and their role that they have all but abdicated over the last 11 months. If they could go to their constituents and say, I passed this, I proposed this bill, I got this bill on the floor, but they haven't done any of that. So now you've got to pull Trump away from his actual duties to go campaign for people who give him nothing, don't help him, and don't deserve our vote in the first place. Great. Wonderful. We're going to lose the House. We're going to lose the Senate. And in effect, we'll lose the presidency. But don't worry. You know, we were saying before that, like, okay, come 2026, it's going to come grinding to a halt because the Congress and the Senate are going to distract Trump by impeaching him over and over about all sorts of nonsense and suing or investigating everybody around him and anything that they do. But it sounds like Trump's going to do it for them. He's going to take himself out of the office himself to campaign all through 2026 and treat it like 2024. If he had tangible things to show you, he wouldn't have to campaign at all. And while he's out campaigning, while he's out running himself thin, appearing in rally after rally, being ferried from one state to the next, you know what he's not going to be focused on? All of the policies that will instead be handled by whoever he leaves behind in Washington, D.C. It seems like they're taking Trump off the board for 2026 and saying, for 2026, we'll take care of things in the whole presidency spot. You just go out and be the mascot. You go out and be the cheerleader. You go out and work your fingers to the bone to get people elected who despise you and betray you the second they get a chance, like Lindsey Graham. I don't even think it's going to work. Good luck campaigning against Thomas Massie. I mean, hell, literally, it's like the worst case scenario that we kept saying has to be avoided. I've been saying since before Trump was even in office. All right, I kept saying, what's the deadline? If he hasn't done things by April, are we going to start to get pissed? If he hasn't done things by June, are we going to start to get pissed? Well, it's December now. Are we pissed yet? What are we waiting for, I guess, is the question. Our worst case scenario was he doesn't do enough. Come 2026, the Democrats take the House, the Democrats take the Senate, they start impeaching Trump, we lose the majority. We don't even have to wait to 2026. That was, to me, the like worst case scenario. Trump doesn't do enough. 2026, he gets jammed up. By 2028, a Democrat gets in office and they just go buck wild. They just gloves off. Tyranny across the board, just like they did under Biden, over multiplied by 10. We don't even have to wait. Marjorie Taylor Greene quits Congress. Nancy Mace is now talking about resigning early from Congress. If she resigns, we lose our majority. We don't even have to wait for an election for the Democrats to take over. We might just hand it to them beforehand. We don't have to worry about them impeaching Trump and distracting him if his own team, and again, the arrogance, Susie Wiles, Trump doesn't know this yet, but he's going to be campaigning like it's 2024. So she's in charge. So we voted for Trump and we got Susie. That's what I'm hearing. It's not Trump saying I plan on, and he will, you know, he'll come out and say, oh, this is all my idea. I'm excited to go campaign like it's 2024. We just heard from Susie Wiles. Trump doesn't even know this yet. He hasn't been given his script for the next year by Susie Wiles. That's the worm tongue. Oh, Trump, the economy's so great. Everybody loves you. They love what you're doing for Israel. That's just the best thing in the world. And, you know, they need you out there campaigning, you know, to benefit the Republicans. Because, you know, the Republican Party, they've really been working hard for you. Like, does he believe this? Nothing he wants is getting done. nothing that he does is getting codified into law. None of the people in the Democratic Party that have systematically destroyed our country over decades is being investigated or subpoenaed or imprisoned or any sort of negative consequence from the traitors that Trump himself has single-handedly pulled into office in his wake. And now he's going to do it again. If you're a Trump supporter, your greatest obligation right now is to call him out. If you love Trump, if you love what Trump represents, if you appreciate the sacrifice he's made for this country, the way to make that sacrifice worth it is to tell him right now he needs to wake the F up. Because he is being screwed by his own people again. And that's taking it in the best possible light with still, I understand, this almost naive desire I have to see Trump actually be who we think he is. Maybe he's not. Maybe he knows all of this. Maybe he's just playing the game like they all are. I choose in my optimism, in my stupid optimism, to believe that Trump is being fooled and that he can be made aware of this and change his tactic. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. It's utterly infuriating. Again, some people around Trump seem to get, but this is the thing. We get no substance. We get no substantial anything. If I could flip a switch and never hear Trump say another word about Somalians, but they get deported, I'd flip that switch. Why are we getting so much rhetoric about Somalia? None of them are getting deported. We get rhetoric about affordability. Everything's still unaffordable. We get rhetoric about law and order, and things are still insane. And again, I'm not trying to downplay the success that Trump has had. Hell, stuff like this is really important on its own, but it doesn't actually statistically move the needle, but it is good. I'm not trying to downplay this stuff. Trump admin has found 60,000 migrant children ignored by Biden from trafficking and child labor. That's good. That is an unqualified good thing. 62,000 unaccompanied migrant children lost by Biden, found by Trump. Hallelujah. Thank God. It ain't moving the needle, though. It ain't 60,000 children that are the ones stealing our jobs and running billion-dollar scams. We need more than rhetoric and more than these symbolic victories. We need real victory. And again, the frustration in this is that it is entirely, again, I mean, just, I don't know. I don't want to just say the same thing over and over, but it's like, how does nobody get how ridiculous it is that we are capable of bringing in 10 million people, but we can't get them out? That is absurd. It's literally easier to get them out than get them in. So if we could do the one thing, we absolutely can do the other. What are we talking about? There's no funding for the $6 billion border wall, but there is funding for $17.5 billion to resettle Afghan migrants. None of this is real. None of the barriers to our success are real. They are all illusionary. They're all imaginary. They're all self-imposed. We are in a state of learned helplessness. We're like the horse that gets her lead tied to a plastic chair and doesn't go anywhere. Nothing is stopping us from walking away except our own minds. Learned helplessness. Like the mice that don't jump out of the cage because the old cage they were in, the walls were too high. They learned they can't jump out of it. So then you put them in a cage they could escape from and they choose not to. Learned helplessness. And when you see how easy it is, when you see how successful other third world countries have run programs that we're asking for, yet we're told we can't do it, it makes it obvious how absurd all of this is. What we should be asking for, like, we're asking for the bare minimum. We're asking for crumbs and we can't even get it. What we should be demanding is the feast. Iran, the country of Iran, you know the ones. We're told they're this backwards medieval society. They're stupid. They're evil, right? They have deported 1.5 million Afghans in 2025 alone. Iran. We've deported 300,000 foreigners. Iran is somehow capable of deporting 1.5 million. And I haven't seen images out of Iran of, you know, giant riots and all this insanity and chaos. They just do it somehow. They just choose to. Okay, Iran might be a special case. They have a tyrannical government. They have very severe control over their people. Okay, what about Pakistan? Pakistan, in the year 2025, has deported 1 million Afghans from their country. Pakistan. The third world nation. Has deported 1 million people in 2025. Three times as many as America has been able to deport. When they have a much, much smaller population of illegal immigrants and a much, much less capable government to do it with. While Europe debates diversity and lets them rape their way through our nations, other countries carry out mass expulsions in the millions. When a nation wants to protect its people and borders, it does. It just does. Why aren't we? Because the people in charge of doing it aren't doing it. Somehow, Pakistan, godforsaken Pakistan, can expel 1 million people, and we can't expel 400,000. No, it's a choice. It's a deliberate choice. When they want to bring in 10 million people, it's done. If they wanted to deport 10 million people, it would be done. They don't want to. When they want to impose extreme restrictions on the mindset of immigrants coming in to guarantee that we have people with certain beliefs in, then they do it. They just do it. They only do it if it benefits Israel. That's the other frustration. Not only do we get to see third world nations accomplish what we are apparently incapable of, expelling 1 million people, we see our own government doing impossible things, achieving incredible results, but never for us. Enough of this. And I want to read this post. I've actually read this before, but I want to read it again because this is the mindset that you need to have. This is the understanding that you need to internalize. It's a post from 4chan. It says, "Nothing about the current political situation we are currently experiencing in the West will ever make sense until you first understand that you live under foreign occupation and are thus subject to rules of the occupiers. If you do not start from there, you'll search for multiple explanations and rationalizations of your society's misery and shortcomings that will ultimately lead you nowhere. The thing is, your enemy has no interest in so-called victory over you because they already won a long time ago, before most of you were even born. Now, the entirety of their actions is aimed at a single goal, humiliation. Humiliation robs you of your humanity, your will, your reason to fight on. Humiliation takes everything from you, and it even robs you of being worthy of empathy. It has been used by every occupier in history, and it's our natural primal understanding of defeat. The Ottoman practice of Kosek is a prime example, similar to the concept of drag kids in modern America. Koseks were a combination of dancers, clowns, and prostitutes. They were young non-Muslim boys taken from their parents and trained to be willful sexual objects and entertainers for the Ottoman Turks. The goal was to have the occupied think, if we allow that to be done to our boys, what else can they do? The answer is anything. It's a full spectrum domination of the minds of the conquered. Your enemy doesn't want gay pride parades in your street, drag queens in your libraries, your son's penis mutilated and drip-fed estrogen from birth, your parents dead from opioids and cancer, your daughter race mixing, your meat replaced with bugs, all while the media laughs at you because they think it's for anyone's benefit. They want it because they know you don't want it, but can't stop them. They want to humiliate you, and there isn't any other reason, and that's exactly what they're doing. Cannot agree more. Could not agree more. It benefits them because it weakens you in your own mind by getting you to believe in your own failure, believe in your own conquering. An enemy is never vanquished until they believe themselves, though. And what a way to convince you that you're vanquished than by spitting in your face, doing exactly what they know you don't want to do, or pretending and signaling that they're going to do what you want to show you, oh, we know what you want. We'll say it. We say it on stage. We say it in interviews. We just don't do it. It's another form of learned helplessness and imposed humiliation. And we're sick of it. Let's go to clip number one here. This is Stephen Miller actually making a very good point about mass immigration into the United States. We'll continue with this on the other side. Let's watch.
The conditions that they left over and over and over again. And we mask the impact of immigration in every public policy issue we discuss. We talk about test scores. Well, if you subtract immigration out of test scores, all of a sudden our test scores skyrocket. If you subtract immigration out of health care, all of a sudden we don't have nearly the size of the health care challenges our country faces. If you subtract immigration out of public safety, all of a sudden, we don't have violent crime in so many of our cities. Issue after issue, we talk about these things as just they just happen to us. The schools just suddenly fail. Violent crime just suddenly explodes. The deficit just suddenly skyrockets. These are a result of social policy choices that we made through immigration.
And Steve. And he's exactly right. Everything is being made worse because of immigration in a thousand different ways. I've told the story before, and when it comes to Afghans, because that's a big topic of conversation right now. In Austin, Travis Heights Elementary School had so many Afghan students all of a sudden, an influx of Afghan students, that they started teaching regular classes in Pashtun. So the average American citizen who's sending their kids to their own public school that they themselves may have attended as children are being taught as if they don't speak English. You have third graders learning how to sound out dog, wasting their life, wasting the precious time that they have as children, sponges of information when they should be maximizing their potential. They're instead being held back like we've attached lead weights to their neck so that they don't exceed the capability of the Afghans that have come in. But say you don't want your kid to be taught the regular classes that are being conducted as if they're ESL in Pashtun. Maybe you get your kid out of that by putting him in the GT, Gifted and Talented, Accelerated program. You know what that program is at Travis Heights Elementary? An English second language Spanish immersion course. So your choice as an American student in an American elementary school is learn nothing because your class is being taught in Pashtun to all of the Afghans that have been delivered to your neighborhood, or go into the Spanish immersion style of teaching where you learn nothing again because you don't speak Spanish and they're teaching your class in a language you don't understand. This is ridiculous. We don't have to stand for this. We never did have to stand for this. We don't have to put up with it anymore. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with us.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, InfoWarriors. Wow, it's 40% off store-wide for the holidays. Just look at these shirts. They would make a great gift for family and friends. You elves are doing a great job. These look wonderful.
Thank you, Santa.
Rudolph, with such great prices, what do you want me to get for you?
I love the sea moss gummies.
Christmas with Alex and crew. I'm cocoa and a coffee brew. All the presents under the tree. Everyone happy and full of glee. Frosty, Santa, Rudolph, and more. Get a gift from the Alex Jones store.
Make a friend happy, smiles ear to ear. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
In the heart of Texas, where the wild coyotes roam, stood the Alex Jones store, his merry home. The shelves were stacked high with shilajit, turmeric, bovine colostrum, too. And he was always stocked high with depression, methylene blue. But up on Mount Microchest lived the grinchiest Grinch that ever was cast. And he stuffed all the supplements in his bag with glee. He took methylene blue, red, ultimate life force, and the shilajit. In the morning, Alex appeared with a shout. The globalist Grinch just robbed my Christmas shop. To be continued.
Wake up, folks! Spread this message! The globalist machine is tightening the chains, and they're after your freedoms!
The Podesta plan is in operation!
Don't worry, it's safe and effective.
Don't you just love my GMO potatoes?
Ladies and gentlemen, the truth is unfolding before our very eyes. We must question everything.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.